Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to today's podcast on this wonderful Saturday afternoon. We have the honor and privilege of interviewing Mr. Matt Katzer. He is the owner, founder, and CEO of a very leading Microsoft cybersecurity company called Camet IT. Matt, thank you for joining us on the show this afternoon. Thank you for your time.
Hey, glad to be here.
Matt, now I know we've done a number of podcasts before. You've been a guest before, I think on a couple of occasions, but can you just refresh for our audience just a little bit about your background, how you got started in cyber, and how you actually started Camet IT, how you got to the great position where it's at today?
Oh, well, that's a big question. We can take your entire session, but I'll be brief on it. Basically, I've always been involved in cyber in some areas of it. And back when I used to work for Intel, there was a group called Intel Systems 2. And what we did is we did a bunch of stuff for an entity out in Baltimore, Maryland. So we would fly back and forth at the time and basically bring out products and talk about new things and cryptology and everything else. So it's always been a kind of a core strength or core fascination for myself. And so around about when we actually Microsoft came out with the Office 365 cloud solutions in the Azure, we took a process and agreement with Microsoft, and we basically started building a really a cloud business that has a very much security focus and a cybersecurity mentality. Because today, especially with everything that goes on and with in terms of the environment and everything else, we all are custodians in the IT industries, and especially in the cloud services is even more so. And with the new government regulations and the requirements that we have to make sure that we meet certain requirements such as the cyber maturity model framework certification, we have to have a level of skill set. And that's what we do. And it's fascinating me. It's always fascinating me. It's been really a lot of fun.
Okay, awesome. Excellent. Now, Matt, this world has been afflicted, of course, we all know, with this pandemic called COVID-19. Back in December, when it started back in Wuhan province of China, nobody realized the full gravity of it. Now it's really gripped the world and gripped it by its teeth, literally. How has COVID-19 affected your business, Camet IT?
It's been really interesting. In some aspects, it's been it's helped our business to grow. And some aspects in terms of the market dynamics, we've lost some clients associated with COVID-19. And a lot of this is, and the interesting thing is the clients that we lose, it's not because they're having problems from financially trying to meet the requirements of the Microsoft license model and everything else, because we have a very forward-looking security model with them. It was more of the COVID-19. Basically, the number of mergers and acquisitions that are actually happening. So the clients that we actually have lost during this pandemic has mostly been because they've been acquired by other entities, and which is an interesting thing, because the model that we typically have is a very dispersed cyber and a kind of a identity protection model that we actually have our clients in, and that's been really super, super successful.
Okay, excellent. Now, are there other ways that it has affected your clients in other areas too, except for the M&A and activity?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is that, and this is when I started the thing about talking about cyber in general, and the whole thing with the pandemic and everything else, and the big change and the cultural change is that how we as organizations and businesses need to learn how to work from home. Now, when you look at it from that aspect, you start peeling the onion on it, and the clients that are affected are the clients that basically are negatively affected, are the clients that are caught up in the what I call the traditional communication security boundary, where you have to secure the building and you kind of protect people that go into the building. Well, with a pandemic and everything else, work at home, it's hard for businesses to protect the people at home. So they use the legacy VPNs and different structures to put those in. So those are one set of clients, and those clients that are in those models have probably in that tradition, what I call that legacy security model, has been more affected by the pandemic than the clients that we actually have that are in the modern security model, which is more of basically, you know, every PC or every computing device is on the internet. So you have to actually put the necessary security controls and everything else down around the user and manage those activities associated with it. And clients that are in the modern security model, they were able to grow just like we are able to grow, and they're able to expand their businesses. Clients that are in the legacy model are caught in a situation where they have to dump those legacy models, such as using like Okta, for instance, which is a legacy authentication model, and move to a more modern process where it's basically agile and flexible. And that's kind of the change that we've seen.
Okay, excellent. Now, Matt, the work from home thing is like having a 99% basically virtual workforce where a company's employees are pretty much working from home or from wherever. This was a concept that many people didn't think would happen until like maybe a few years down the road from other cyber professionals that I've talked to. But now we've seen this transformation in just a matter of 2 or 3 months. So this is a reality now. Now, because of this, there have been many security issues. You know, we've seen the Zoom bombing, you know, and a lot of people are now using Microsoft Teams in place of Zoom. We've seen domain name heisting, much more sophisticated phishing variants, threats like creating fictitious websites like the WHO, World Health Organization, where people are actually pointing to downloading malicious documents, you know, where they may have like Word documents, which may have some macros enabled in them, so forth. These are just some examples. But now, how have you helped your clients deal with the security issues that they may have faced with the work from home situation right now?
Well, I mean, that's a very interesting thing, because our model basically has always been around it's about the user identity, and the user can be anywhere in the world, and you have to manage and basically handle the cybersecurity issues associated with it. And that's how, and so when you actually look at that perspective, when COVID-19 actually hit, for instance, from our aspect, it didn't really change the way we do business. It actually, you know, actually helped. It actually kind of demonstrated that this is the way you actually have to manage clients in this modern age. So in our environment, for instance, it's like from a security standpoint, you know, we have really with clients that are into our security programs, we have a full 360 view of what's going on into the clients, into the management PC, how data is being actually managed. And also from a standpoint, what websites you can actually visit on those PCs and which ones are acceptable and which ones are not acceptable, be it through a Mac, through your cell phone, whatever you want, how you want to access it, because it's about controlling the business data. And when you actually look at taking a model or trying to do a work from home model, and the model of modern security is about protecting the business assets, because the business assets is the data and is all the intellectual property associated. It doesn't matter where those devices are, and you have to actively manage it. And you have to actually think there's no real difference of a like an inside threat in a PC and an environment. It's all zero trust if you're at home or if you're using a bring your own device or if you're inside a building. It's a zero trust environment, and you have to manage it that way. And that's actually the secret of this. And for us, in terms of how we actually manage work from home, in terms of going to those malicious sites, you have those same problems as you in the building environment. It doesn't really matter. You just have to basically aggressively put the necessary security controls in place from day one on anything you manage. That means you use multi-factor authentication. That means you use website filtering. That means that basically you build conditional access type models to actually manage what applications can be open, what application can access business data. And also, you got to secure the data so that in case something, a device is stolen or corrupted, you have the ability to basically brick it or encrypt it or basically take it off the net. Those are modern security methodologies. That's how you actually, that's how the work from home environment works for us and for our clients.
Okay. Just two side questions here, Matt. Now, with zero trust, that's basically assuming that you just really can't trust anybody, even if you have an employee that's been with you for 20 years. I know zero trust is probably one of the best ways to go right now, but how do you feel about that? Because I've talked to other people, and they say it's kind of an extreme. You know, you got to have some sort of trust, some granular level at most, maybe. How do you feel about that? I mean, is that something that you strongly advocate, or you kind of say, hey, well, we need a little middle ground here, and let's have some trust? How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question, because when you talk about everyone trust, you know, we trust, like we have communication with you, we have a certain level of trust, but what happens is, in the zero trust environment, the fundamental assumption is that environments can't be trusted. So if you have let's say you have an employee working on a device, totally trust the person and everything else. If the person goes somehow, gets a malicious piece of malware thrown on his device, or does something inadvertently that basically that could compromise something, you have to have an environment set up so that you can catch those things. And that's what a zero trust environment is. And the other aspect of a zero trust environment, and this is when you do like things like Windows Virtual Desktop, for instance, which is a lot different than like the RDP desk, the legacy RDP desktop. Like in those environments, you want to basically say, okay, what corporate assets do I start restricting, and what security models I put in place to restrict all that? And that's the key.
Okay. Well, now, this is a general question. This work from home, do you think this is now going to be our new normal right now for the next coming years, decades, or do you think there'll be a time when people will return back to the traditional brick-and-mortar presence, or how do you feel about this trend? Do you think it's the way it's going to be now in the future?
Yeah, I think this is the way it's going to be in the future. I think what's happening in business, I mean, there's issues that we still from business that we need to address. There's a cultural issue because, you know, we look at humans in general, we're a very social animal. We need to have to communicate, so we have to have those mechanisms. And even in business, you need to have that communication as well. So how do you actually maintain the culture and everything else? And I think the things that you'll start is my crystal balls, I see changes. In the workplace, what I think is going to happen is you're going to see more of these transit workstations where some of the, you know, you have a desk in the office, but it's a shared desk, where on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you may have some people come in the office and Tuesday, Thursday and use the same facility and use the same desk. So in essence, you have a certain amount of socialization because you need some of that stuff to maintain a culture in a company and to grow it. But you also have to basically have the flexibility. And if you actually build the environment like what we've done, and you start looking in terms of how do you actually manage that environment, how do you actually manage culturally to make sure that things are actually happening? And so like in our case, we actually have morning huddles and we have afternoon huddles. And we have with our different teams have afternoon huddles. And what happens is that you start getting a culture of accountability. And that's really, really important, because as organization grows in this work from home, I think the changes that you're going to see and what's happening now is it's all turning into a culture of accountability. Did you do what you said you're going to do? Because you have other people rely on it. You can't just walk down to the cubicle next door and say, hey, did you do this? And that's the change that's happening. And with accountability, you're starting to get more efficiency in staff. You're going to, I suspect you'll see companies are going to change the size of them. They may not have as many employees as they did before, or they'll have different type of employees doing different functions. And I think the office space environment is going to change as well. I think it's going to turn into more a transition environment where you have, like in a concept when we worked back in Intel days, we used to have travelers workstations where people come from different sites. But I think that's the model that's going to happen. People are going to change the way we do things. But you'll still have the big teams to get together and meeting and everything else, because culturally, socially, we need that.
Yeah, for sure. Now, obviously, you know, COVID-19, it's a magnitude, as I've just alluded to earlier in the show. I think many business leaders, especially CIOs, CISOs, there have been a lot of lessons that have been learned. As a cybersecurity professional yourself, Matt, who's been doing this for a long time, what do you feel the lessons have been learned from all this, from your perspective and from what other people that you've talked to?
Well, I think the number one rule is the realization that cybersecurity is a function, and you have to not only staff it, You're either going to have to staff it internally, you're going to have to train the people association. Like we, for instance, we have a cybersecurity training package from Circadence for ARIES, Project ARIES, that the DoD uses. Tools like that, and you have to basically build that methodology. It is a standard part of the business. And it's just like, and it's a necessary part of the business. And the other aspect you have to decide from, you know, from IT or even for the CISO has to look at it is that what functions do we do internally? What functions do we find trusted partners? And as this gets more and more looking at it, we're getting to the compliance needs. Like one of the new compliance requirements coming out of GSA, for instance, is that in the federal government, there's something known as a cybersecurity maturity model certification framework that's being required, so that if you're doing certain segments of the government, you have to meet this requirement by the, I think, March of 2022. And what's happening now is that GSA is saying, hey, any contract that goes to federal government now has to have the same DoD type security. And we're hearing words going that any type of grants coming from the federal government are going to also have this requirement. And what this means is that organizations now are actually going to have, let's say for like CAM and IT, for instance, if we're going to support a customer that has these type of grants, we're going to have to meet that that cybersecurity, whatever that cybersecurity level is, that certification level. And so from a changes how CISO is doing business, a CISO now has to look at it, not just how I manage the assets. Which tools do I use? Which organizations do I use? Do they meet the necessary requirements so I can actually manage and protect the assets? That's how things are changing. And it's no longer a set it and forget it mentality. It is a constant battle because it is a war.
Right. Well, how do you feel then about the business continuity planning, the DR planning? Do you think that a lot of business leaders are now realizing the importance of having one? How do you feel about that? Is that going to be a big high priority now for the CIOs and CISOs in corporate America?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's in our case, you know, we're Office 365 and Azure bases. Every customer that we touch, we have a business continuity plan in place. We basically have external storage for emails. We have external storage for what goes on their OneDrive or the SharePoint. It is just part of the design. You should not have an implementation unless there's a business continuity piece behind it. And you can have different vendors and how you want to put it, but you can no longer, and this is really, I think, with COVID-19 and some of the other aspects, but also just not only natural disasters and things like that. What you have is you have an environment where basically you have to protect the digital assets because the digital assets are the business, is the business value. And so it's not just nice to have, you have to have this. And I think you'll be seeing as we move into 21 and 22, business continuity strategies are going to be requirements for various type of insurance policies. If you don't do this, the insurance is not going to pay off. And we're seeing some of that right now with some of the new cyber policies.
Okay. Now, Matt, I hold the view that out of everything that's negative, there's always the flip side, and there is always some positive behind it, too. With COVID-19, what is the positives that you think has come out of this pandemic? From a human standpoint, psychological standpoint, tech standpoint, what do you feel, if any good at all, has come out so far?
Well, I think the main thing, and I alluded to this earlier, it really starts, organizations are forced to look back at how you do business or how you actually work with the employees and how do you actually reach out and make sure that your employees are engaged in the business. And what COVID-19 has done, and I think this is like, and you can talk about different types of habits you have, like what the Gross Institute does and scaling up in terms of huddle with Vern Hardish. There's different models, or Andy Bailey, his model. But what's happened is that we as leaders in an organization need to learn how to actually manage people or manage our assets for accountability. And as it goes through an organization, especially with the Black Lives Matters and everything else, everything gets down to everybody is accountable and we have to manage the environment associated with it. So the positive thing that we actually see in this COVID-19 is, I feel, is from a business management standpoint, is that those companies with those leaders that step out and put the necessary processes in place, for you have accountability, you have basically communications, you have learning to how execution, those organizations have really learned from the COVID-19 and pandemic. And you have those institutions that basically have not and they're struggling, and those institutions will be filtered out in the market through either a merger or acquisition.
Okay. Now we're coming to the core of our show here, Matt. I think one of the biggest lessons learned is the importance of using a cloud-based infrastructure. Now, I know a lot of companies have been using the cloud before. Some of them have now realized, ooh, I've on-premises solutions. I need to move that to the cloud. I think probably the best platform out there is obviously the Microsoft Azure and the M365 platform. Now, with this, you can deploy the workforce very quickly, very efficiently, very easily. There's no need to issue really any company laptops or wireless devices. Everything can be accessed through a secure means for straight to Azure. So, for example, that you can create virtual machines, virtual servers, and especially the virtual desktops. What do you think about this, of putting everything into the cloud and now starting to make use of Azure to deploy and mobilize your workforce now, your remote workforce into the future?
To me, this is a fundamental requirement. This is how the world works. I mean, one of the big things that we're seeing when you look at, and it's just not just saying, hey, you're on 365 or you're using Azure. It's, has you adjusted your implementation of those technologies to use the modern security protocols? That's really what the key is, because there's a lot of folks who are in companies we run into that they're on 365, but what they do is they have a hub spoke strategy with VPN where they take all the VPN traffic, including the 365 traffic, and route it to a central hub. And then they basically go service it out of the central hub and try to attempt to manage it that way. And those organizations have found that that strategy is pretty much a failing strategy, because you no company has enough money to actually adequately basically protect the environment in that world, in the environment. So when you talk about cloud strategies, for instance, and you talk about, like for us with 365, you know, we have large organizations that basically have 365, and literally it's like the work from home orders click in place and say, okay, I guess we'd better work at home. And they have the infrastructure already there. There's nothing they had to do, because they basically built the security model into the clients, into the workplace. So in essence, it was just getting another device, and they basically have the ability to manage the application management on the BYOB devices. They can actually go, and so whatever the PC or Mac that the person uses in the home, they can secure that. And that's the piece that's happening. So when you look at how things changes, that is the big lesson. And you have to have an agile infrastructure. You have to have an agile thinking. And you have to basically figure out how to actually, what is the job, and separate some of the, and look at stuff that either works or doesn't work. And that's what the cloud does. And if you're cloud-centric and you use that as a model, it's like I don't care. It's just another event and your business continue on. If you don't have that model, then you have real trouble. And that's what we've seen. And that's probably the big lessons learned for folks. And that's why we're seeing such a massive movement to basically doing 365 and Azure with Windows Virtual Desktop and basically roll into that, because basically those companies that have done that are being successful, and those companies that haven't have not.
Okay. Now, apart from M365 and creating the virtual desktops and the virtual servers in Azure, what are some of the other main features of Azure that can be used to deploy the workforce? I know in Azure, I mean, I have an account, I'm a client of yours too. There's a plethora of everything, anything out there, but what are some of the main tools that you've seen customers use? What do you set up for them? And what are the benefits of using Azure for the remote workforce?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of big benefits when you look at Azure. You know, one of the big things that, you know, we're proponent of, single sign-in, for instance. And what happens is when you actually take, like, and you have to step back in 365 and Azure, Azure is really the identity manager for 365. Most people don't internalize that, but when you create a 365 account, in essence, then you have an Azure identity associated with it. And what you get used on that is basically what turn on licenses. And one of the big features that basically probably the first that people use is usually with single sign-on with Azure. That means their 365 account and all the security you put around it for multi-factor authentication, that's also used to log in for like Salesforce and being able to manage it from 365. So 365 and Azure becomes the identity management for that piece. And there's tons of different apps. It's for like ourselves is, you know, we use tons of DocuSign. Do we have a separate DocuSign account? No, we use our 365 Azure account to actually manage our DocuSign assets. And that's how we can do it securely. And that's kind of one of the features. Those are kind of really but unknown features that people think about that's there with the single sign-in SAML. Some of the other features you have in Azure, and this is the what we call the log analytics. And when you look at security or managing a desktop environment, you have to basically go in and basically, you know, you want to collect all the Windows event logs, everything that happens, and you want to put those in a place. That's what Azure Log Analytics does. And the reason for that is a simple one. Because if you're using like an external security product like Splunk or something like ArcServe or one of those, they have to suck all those logs off. Sometimes they actually put an agent on the desktop to do it. In Microsoft, we just automatically put the storm in Azure. And then in our case, and instead of using like an external service like Splunk, a security incident event manager, we our security incident event manager known as Azure Sentinel. So we actually use that to manage the incidents, manage the alerts, and basically give us that picture of the work-from-home environment. So you start looking at what you can do in a cloud-based solution to basically improve productivity and security. And there's other features that you see as well. Let's say you have a bunch of server infrastructure in Azure. You can actually put the necessary management on it. You can actually prevent DDoS attacks. You can in terms of how you handle the network security groups and all the security infrastructure that's around your Azure business assets. You manage those. And there's other tools that we use in Azure. One of the tools we use is a data mapper, where you actually have a data mapper. You can install it on a server. So, or, you know, whatever the digital asset's in, and you can actually map all the interaction, what ports are being actually communicated, what traffic are going to different entities, and actually map out the whole logical structure of communication inside Azure and how it happens to users and everything else. So when you talk about Zero Trust Network, we use those tools to isolate the business assets. And those are just some of the things, but there's countless stuff you can do from if you want to do containers, if you want to do Docker, or you can just go pick the technology. You can spin those things up in Azure, and you do what's necessary to actually make the business work.
Okay, excellent. Now, how can a business start using Azure? So, for example, there's company XYZ. They've heard of it, but they've never used it before. How can a business start using it? What are some base tools they should get started with? And how can you help them with this? Can you actually help a client say, hey, we can move your entire IT infrastructure into the cloud, we'll do it for you, and we can provide maintenance? How do you get started with a new client like that?
Well, it's very simple. I think the simplest way to get started with new clients is through your 365 account. So if you're not into Office 365 or your email services are basically still not still in a legacy system, the first thing you do is you want to move that over into Office 365. And then getting to Azure component, it's basically a license add-on. So once you add that license piece, then you have the fundamental infrastructure you can build forward. Once we have that, and that's usually the starting point for most all our clients, once we have that one piece in, We usually will approach clients and say, okay, let's go do a security assessment, or let's go see what you actually have and see what you can, assets makes business sense to move to Azure. And then we'll build out an infrastructure and link and tie it into your 365 identity management. So you have this very seamless environment that's already working together. And then we start picking and choosing the business assets that make sense to move into Azure. And some assets don't make sense. It's like what would happen a lot of times with Microsoft Teams, for instance, in terms of what we're seeing a lot of companies that actually have a lot of legacy data and everything else. And what they're actually doing is building out Teams and using some of the SharePoint backend of Teams to actually move file storage data that they would have on-premise into a Teams infrastructure. So you actually pick up pieces like that. And so gradually you get all these different pieces and you hook these things together, and that's the things that you actually, that's how you get started. And then once you have that, then you start looking and saying, okay, let's look at those line of business apps that you actually run in the on-prem environment. Well, which one is there's already a hosted service? Okay, let's go look at using that hosted service. Does it make business sense to move it over to that instead of basically migrating? And that's I would say 50% of the line of business apps disappear and they use a hosted service. And in order to control the access to them, they use the Azure identity to control access into that 360, into that line of business service. And then you have a small chunk of line of business apps that maybe are accessed by the finance department or some of the planning folks, but not by everyone in the company. What happens in those cases, we build a WVD, Windows Virtual Desktop infrastructure, for that line of business app and restrict it down to just the business people or the employees that need access to it. So in doing this, you've accomplished a couple things. You basically made the organization cloud ready. You reduce the infrastructure costs significantly. You basically put a zero trust environment in place so you have a modern security model, and you freed up resources for the IT organization can actually go do those things that IT organization need to do, is look for ways to add business value and increase revenue opportunities for the organization. Because that's as IT professionals, that's really our job. As our job is not to consume everything. Our job is to figure out ways to improve business efficiency and make sure the business has more profitable and more cash in the business so it can do the things it needs to do to grow.
Okay, excellent. Now, a lot of people are using Microsoft Teams. That seems to be the best collaborative tool in M365. Are there any other collaborative tools that our audience needs to know about, like from a video standpoint or audio standpoint or even just using like VoIP technology?
Yeah, I mean, most of the stuff that we deploy now is with Teams, for instance, is that our phone system right now, even the phone system I'm using for this broadcast, I'm going through Teams. So Teams is our audio conferencing, it's our video conference, it's our phone system and everything else. So voice is all integrated into the Teams infrastructure. If you look at other areas that you're seeing is that Microsoft has like Stream for video content. And they also have different features in terms of like what they call live streaming. And what live streaming does is live streaming allows you to stream up to, 10,000 going to 100,000 people with basically a team meeting. And especially in this COVID-19, as we try to connect to people, we have to basically stream to live audience. And as our business grows from a sales standpoint, we actually need to stream to people to the community that may want to use our services or find more information about the company. Those are the things that are happening now. And those are what, when you talk about collaboration, that's just one piece. Now, the other piece has been interesting. It's been the changes in terms of, the project management, the project methodologies. And we've noticed this is that in the Microsoft side, everyone looks at, project, this humongous thing to organize tasks and everything else. And basically by the time you download and use it, everyone gets frustrated because it's too complex. So what's happening now in the terms of with the 365 infrastructure, there's things that you use for Project Online. It's like we're using Project Online it's sort of like, you know, for those who are not familiar, it's like Basecamp or something like that. It has the same functionality where you actually can now basically link project tasks and everything else, do it online with clients, and invite them into the project in collaboration mode, and actively organize and communicate with the status of project, what's going on. We never had those tools before. And when you look at what COVID-19 has done, they brought all those tools into the limelight, because for us as business leaders, in order to manage businesses in efficiently and effective ways, we need to communicate in clarity what needs to be done, not only to our employees, but also to our clients. And that's the change that's happened with collaboration. And for those that are not on the Microsoft platforms, you need to seriously look at what you're using and what you can grow in your business. And you need to find integrated tools that work. It's no longer accepted. No one has the time to basically take disparate tools and link them together. Now, I'm kind of more of a Teams and Microsoft, you know, perspective. And so when I look at like Zoom or Slack or something like that, those are basically standalone entities. They don't really integrate well into the modern environment. And that's the type of thing that changes. You need tools that integrate, because nobody has the time to basically deal with disparaging technologies.
Well, that's a key word, I guess, integration. So, Matt, finally, what other thoughts and recommendations can you give to our audience as they prepare now for this new normal?
Well, I think the key thing is that there's really two things if you look at it. The first thing I'd actually look at is that you have to really embrace the zero trust model. And zero trust model is not that basically, yeah, you can trust, like, you know, I trust you, Ravi. I trust people like day to day. I trust my sister, my in-laws and things. But at the same time, do I trust their systems to connect into my environment? So you have to separate it between it's an individual thing, more it's a business thing. And that's the first part. And from a zero trust environment, it's a business requirement. And you have to build the infrastructure, assuming that something bad is going to happen. And if you do that, knock on wood, it may not, but chances are it probably will. That's probably the first piece. The second piece is that with these, in terms of the new normal, it's you have to look the way you operate your business. Are you operating your business in terms of from a growth mentality? Do you have basically, are you doing daily huddles? Do you have your morning daily huddles? Do you have your afternoon team huddles? How do you actually make sure that basically people are accountable for what they're doing? And those are probably, that's the second thing. And I would say those are really the two pieces that really is driving how we're going to be successful as leaders in businesses today.
Okay. Now, finally, Matt, as we wrap up our show, what's the best way that prospects or new clients can reach out to you?
Well, there's a couple of different ways depending what their needs are. The best way to reach out to us is really go to our website at www.camma.com. And go to our contact page and just go request us to reach out to you and set an appointment. And just you can mention this podcast that you heard us, and that's really the best way. And then we can actually work with you to get you to get your business and to the next level and help you use these collaboration tools that we talked about and get you into Office 365 and Azure, and also even help you trying to get that Teams deployment so you can start using these modern collaboration tools so you can help grow your business. But yeah, contact us at www.camma.com. Go to our contact page.
Okay, Matt, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. It's been a very insightful show, especially how to use Azure and the M365 platform. Thanks for your time, and have a great weekend.
Great. Thanks very much for inviting me. Look forward to speaking with you again.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
Bye-bye.